over, I guess, talked about in the press over and over again, and we're just going to dig right in, is, you know, well, they're a Canadian band. You know, they're a Canadian, you know, the preeminent Canadian indie band. And this whole business, when the press everywhere else in the world writes you up and they say Canadian indie band, what's your immediate, you know, your visceral reaction to that?
It's funny you were talking about, you know, while, like, at, I guess, the height of the, a lot of that hype, it was funny because a lot of those bands were not getting played on Canadian radio at all. In fact, the whole CanCon structure is kind of a joke because there's really limited space. Like, all they have to do is play Nickelback 100 times a day and their CanCon is filled. And so there's no real room. And, you know, they'll sooner play, like, something Bryan Adams sang, you know, 20 years ago.
Right, Summer of
69. Before they'll play something that's relevant now, you know. It's just, like, a huge corporate structure and just a lot of guys that just won't give up on, you know. It's kind of weird. So that whole thing, I never really fully understood it. So, but as far as, like, going out there and being, like, sort of branded like this Canadian product, you know, I mean, the Deers work really hard to transcend that. We don't really make tons of references to where we're from in our music, and, you know, we don't go on stage wearing, like, you know, with Canadian flags draping from our, you know, amplifiers or, you know, stuff like that. That's to me, that stuff makes, you know, it's just that stuff is really irrelevant. You know, it's like where I'm from doesn't really matter because the music isn't really from Canada. It's from outer space. You know, it's meant for everyone, whether you're in Timbuktu or Sri Lanka or, you know, Quebec or San Francisco, you know, like it doesn't matter. You know, if I start, you know, wearing, you know, some bullshit patriotic kind of like thing on our sleeve, is like, it just kind of, you know, how are people going to relate, you know? Well, I mean, the Deers have, you know, always been ambitious, not in a careerist way, more in a, like, presentation of the art kind of way. And I think, like, that is like one of the, you know, the cornerstones of our whole operation is, you know, having that kind of ambition. And, you know, which is why I'm thoroughly exhausted today, because, you know, no matter how tired I am, I still can't go out there and give any less than 100%. And, like, I wouldn't feel right about it. And whenever, like, there's anything distracting the show, I come off stage and I'm really upset a little bit with, like, just feeling distracted. And, like, it was interesting because last night we were in Los Angeles and I had a few, like, technical things that kind of threw off my game a little bit at the beginning of the show, and it took me, like, that much more effort to, like, get back in the zone, you know, to the point where it was just, you know, you're just in the pocket and you're on autopilot until thank you, good night, you know. So, I mean, I think that, like, there, you know, this is the thing that I'm uncomfortable with, being identified as, like, a, you know, an indie rock band, because, you know, as independent as we have been for all these years, we're not, I don't feel like we fall into that, you know, because indie music, I mean, that's become such a weird genre, because you could be indie music but backed by millions of corporate dollars, you know, with a huge marketing strategy right down to your, you know, what kind of shoes you're wearing, you know, and the haircut you have. And that's really never, that's not something that the Deers, like, identify with. We identify with, you know, you know, putting our entire being, heart, soul, blood, sweat, tears, etc., into this thing, and whatever happens, happens. You know, whether it's a flop or a success, whatever, it's not even up to us. You know, we just know we have to go out there and do this thing, and we go out and do it. Point final.
Am I wrong that you're pretty darn comfortable touring with bands where the audience doesn't necessarily get the same thing, you know, before you? So like Secret Machines, the Deers and Secret Machines as a pair, you know.
The thing is it's funny because I think the parallels between like bands that we wind up touring with are not like the obvious ones. You know, there's certain subtext that like, what was interesting about doing the Secret Machines tour is that they were dealing career-wise, you know, like a similar situation. They had, you know, one guy leave the band, so they had this new guy in the band, and that was huge for them because they're only a three-piece. Can you imagine being a three-piece and you're shifting one guy out? It's the same as like being a six-piece and four people are gone. So they were dealing with that. They were dealing with new labels, new management, new all kinds of everything. And it was really interesting to be on tour with them in that transitional phase and us in our transitional phase. And I think musically, there are a few similar elements. You know, I mean, the Deers has a bit of that sort of, I mean, for lack of better term, sort of D&D, you know, aspect to Deer's music. You know, Dungeons and Dragons, that's what I'm talking about.
Exactly.
You know, but I mean, the bands are very, very different, you know. And I think with this tour, it's like, you know, I'm finding that there are elements that are like, and I think it's more on like, sort of like where we're at in our careers is where we sort of are aligned, not necessarily outwardly like sounding the same, which is, it's better for the audience because then they get a little sprinkle of this, sprinkle of that, you know, instead of, you know, 2 hours of 15-minute sets of the same exact hardcore band.
I found this CBC quote. And, you know, just because it was the CBC, I thought it was kind of wild. Mm-hmm. The Deers' performances evolved into part nihilistic Charlie Brown special and part Brechtian theater. The drama of their live shows forced audiences to examine the dark forces at work in their nations and hearts. Bizarre, hopeless, entropic, and devastating were the only words one could use to describe hearing and seeing the Deers back in 2002. You didn't watch or listen so much as get assaulted by the music. And this is my favorite line. You had to be in the right headspace. You either had to be completely inebriated or sickeningly sober. And one of the things that I know is that the music over all these years really is transformed by experience. Mm-hmm. So when audiences go along with you on this, what do you think about that? Is that, do you think they get it or do you think it doesn't matter?
Well, as I said before, I mean, you can only hope that, you know, like we do what we do and we let the chips fall where they may. You just hope they fall into the right places. You know, with the Deers, there's, you know, chips falling everywhere. And I guess, there isn't really much in between. Like, the Deers are usually, you know, comprised of extremes. Just certain levels of extremes. But there's never like a sort of middle of the road vibe, you know. And I don't know. I don't know why that is. Maybe, you know, I think that's its blessing and its curse is that sort of, you know.
Which brings me to Missiles. This one seems to me, and you wrote it before things went where they've gone in the world. But here I am staring at the single of Money Babies, and when I played it, you know, actually, it's going to be played. I pre-record my Sunday radio show, so Money Babies will be on at about 4:30 today. But as I was playing it yesterday, I opened up the microphone and I said, you know, I wonder if Murray even knew what the world was going to be like as he was writing this record.
And
it's kind of cosmic in its own strange way.
It's totally weird because, you know, I mean, a song like that just, you know, comes out of nowhere, writes itself in like 5 minutes, you know. It's like that chorus, you know, was just handed over. Like, you know, I didn't even have to write down anything because it just made complete sense off the top. And, you know, I feel really lucky to, you know, to be that sort of messenger, you know, because, you know, it's funny because a lot of people, you know, they don't really get that. You know, when an album comes out, it's not like you wrote it like the day before the album came out, you know, and or when a song comes out, it's like that, you know, you could have written it like 2 years before. And then, you know, you go through the whole process of recording an album and then, you know, setting it up and releasing it and all that stuff. It usually takes about a couple, you know, like a year to 2 years to go from beginning an album to it actually being out there for public consumption. And it was just interesting to see a lot of people's comments on, like, you know, how Money Babies was, like, you know, somehow tied to sort of the economic global economic meltdown. And really what happened was I was walking, Neptune was about, I don't know, like 8 months old, and we were on tour in Europe and in Holland, Utrecht to be exact. And I was out looking, you know, I remember Natalia saying before she went to bed and Neptune was already asleep, it was late at night after the show kind of thing, you know, I'm all sweaty and still wearing my show clothes and just wanting to close out the night myself. And she goes, make sure there's milk for the morning, you know. And so I went about, you know, it's weird because in some parts of Europe, you know, stuff closes really early, and especially in England. But in Holland, I found, like, especially on like maybe like a weeknight or something, it's like you can't find anything. And I had a pocket full of euros and couldn't find a place to pick up some milk. And all of a sudden I started hearing all this music, and then I was just like, started singing this melody, and I was walking the streets. Finally, I found the milk, but I had to walk a long way. And I found a kind of 7-Eleven type deal, and I was able to find it. But I just thought it was interesting, and it just, all the rest of the lyrics just turned into this whole other, you know, thing.
It's a much, much bigger story than the economic crisis. It's being able to provide milk for your child, which
something,
is...
Well, that's, I think that's what the whole thing is. It's just like something really... I think the message of the song was just like something so, you know, basic, you know, and trying to stay cool in the face of that, you know. It's like, it's, I think that's what a lot of Missiles is about, is dealing with these really... you know, basic problems like reconciling, you know, or facing down, you know, death or, you know, really hardships and somehow overcoming and staying optimistic, you know, and which is why the album is called Missiles, because it was all about, I think in the end, it was all about like threats and feeling threatened and, so what are you going to do about it? Are you going to wallow, or are you going to, you know, deal with it? Are you going to man up, you know? And I think that the record is all about manning the F up, you know?
You've never really worried about being radio friendly or hit singles or anything like that. And yet, it's interesting, as I was queuing through the tracks, I said, well, yeah, it's hard to make singles out of, you know, 7-8 minute songs. Mm-hmm. But in the end, these are still pop songs. You know, they're well written. They are well crafted. They are well sung. They are well, you know, you're not into the, ooh, let's go in a garage and do the DIY. Yeah. These are produced songs. Mm-hmm. So are, you know, and I read in a recent interview, you called it neo blues.
Right.
Are you really anti-hit songs, or is just that it's not really the point?
No, I think something that we've been exploring on all of our records is the concept of sort of, you know, taking pop elements and elements of pop songs and not necessarily creating a pop song per se, more like a deconstructed, you know, gourmet plated vibe. And I think that's what we've always tried to do, and not just, you know, give you the, you know, the happy meal.
San Francisco's, yeah, exactly. Thank goodness. Happy meal. You know, what you get for that buck.
Yeah, I mean, because you can get the happy meal anywhere. It's a dime a dozen. And I think, like, it's a wonderful opportunity to take, you know, these elements of pop music. And, you know, which is what, like, again, it's another blessing and curse of the Deers, is like certain familiarities are there that just draw you in just enough. But once you get there, it's twisted up enough, hopefully, to keep you interested. I think to some people, they're repelled, especially radio stations. You know, or like commercial radio, you know what I mean? I think that we've really explored that a lot, and I think something that I think for the future of the band, it would be interesting to not necessarily adhere, but to reconstruct our concept of pop music. We've deconstructed, and now I think if we can reconstruct and possibly, you know, break into that commercial radio realm, I think it'll make the next era of the Deers really interesting, you know? Because then if we can maintain that sense of deconstruction while we're reconstructing pop music, we just might have something.
What's your perspective on the fact that when you started this band, well, I mean, it was starting, Downloadable Music was, you know, was about 4 years hence. Because, I mean, 99 was the year that started to happen.
Natalia was talking about how, in an interview that I saw that she did, she was talking about how when we started, you know, it was still all about, like, 8x10s and cassette tapes and, like, hand-delivered, like, you know, press packages. There was no MySpace. There was no iTunes. There was no... most people didn't even have a friggin' laptop, you know, like it's really bizarre to see now that you can hold your phone to a radio and find out whose song that is. We went from 8x10s to that, you know. There's probably some of your listeners don't even remember 8x10s, you know, like having to give your 8x10 to
my demographic skews older, so they do, right? Scarily enough, but
you know what I'm saying though, right? Yeah,
it's crazy.
It's crazy, like when we started, like how things have changed, and we've watched the whole business change. We've watched, you know, empires crumble, you know, like in such a short space of time. I remember, you know, when we kind of started out, and, you know, we were kind of, you know, making a bit of noise up in Canada. And then, you know, some major labels started to get interested in the band in Canada. And it's just funny, this, you know, this one guy, it's like he went from being like Mr. Gold Card, you know, drinks on him guy to, I don't even think he's in the business anymore. Like in such a short time, relatively speaking, like within, like, we're 2009, I met him in 2000, you know, less than 10 years. It's like, kind of blows my mind, you know.
So we do a thing called a musical sandwich.
Right.
And what it is two Deers songs is the bread.
Okay.
And then songs by anybody else you want to put in between. And then I'm under moral obligation to play exactly what you ask me to play.
Oh, wow.